TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Is anti-Zionism anti-Semitism? Israeli historian Ilan Pappé and former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis. The question put to historian Ilan Pappé by Intelligence Squared and recorded before the most recent attack on Gaza was, is anti-Zionism anti-Semitism?
Our first speaker, Ilan Pappé, is an Israeli historian, an anti-Zionist activist, a professor at the University of Exeter. He has challenged traditional versions of Israeli history. Ilan Pappé, you have the floor for 10 minutes.
The equation that is being put in front of you tonight is both outrageous and ridiculous. If only because it makes every Palestinian in the world, almost everyone who lives in the Arab and Muslim world, anyone who regards themselves as liberal or on the left, it turns all these people into anti-Semites. Whereas quite a few people who regard themselves as Zionists, like the Christian Zionists, are actually anti-Semites themselves. But it is important to challenge it because it was used with some effect to stifle the debate on Palestine in the West. This allegation is used in order to prevent the promotion for positions of power of politicians known for the long-term support for Palestine. By defaming these politicians as anti-Semitic, official Israel and its supporters worldwide hope to bring them down, as in the case of Jeremy Corbyn, or delegitimize them, as in the case of Ilhan Omar in the American Congress. So this is a good opportunity and an appropriate venue to say loud and clear that if you are against Zionism, or if you define yourself as I do, an anti-Zionist, you are not anti-Semite, or in my case, a self-hating Jew, which my doctors told me is an incurable disease and I would have to live with for the rest of my life. I will make 5 points, one long one and 4 or 5 short ones. Anti-Semitism is an old, ugly attitude that demonizes Jews because of who they are and led in the past to horrendous policies of discrimination and genocide. It still prevails today, and despite the passing of years, it's basically not changed much. Its origins are deeply rooted in the Christian faith and were adopted in more recent years by right-wing supremacists and some extreme Islamic groups. Anti-Zionism, on the other hand, is a new phenomenon, as is Zionism, and dates back to the 1820s. When, as you know, Zionism began as a Christian project before it was a Jewish project. And then it was part of an internal debate within evangelical Christianity. Anti-Zionism then was a moral position against romantic nationalism and Christian fundamentalism that today we call Christian Zionism. Christian Zionism is an evangelical belief that the return of the Jews to Palestine would precipitate the second coming of the Messiah, the resurrection of the dead, and the conversion of the Jews to Christianity or their barbecuing in hell. Now, these barbecuing Christians, who are very important, are anti-Semites who want to get rid of all the Jews they don't like and get in return the only Jew they want, Jesus Christ. It's a double bill. They are today the most important base of President Trump and his ilk, and they are the most important Zionists in the US, providing immunity for Israeli policies on the ground. When Jewish activists and intellectuals adopted Zionism in response to anti-Semitism in the late 19th century, their antagonists were mainly other Jews. They were either Orthodox Jews who saw a premature return to Palestine as tempering with the will of God and regarded as a heresy the substitution of rich monotheistic religion with the ideologically poor modern idea of romantic nationalism. So they were definitely not anti-Semites. Other Jews believed that supporting universal ideologies such as liberalism or socialism would be the answer, and if they had to move geographically from anti-Semitic environments, they preferred to go somewhere else, mainly to the US, but not only to the US. They were also not anti-Semites. When Zionism became a settler colonial movement on the ground with the building of Jewish colonies in late Ottoman Palestine, and during the British Mandate, the Palestinian National Movement perceived Zionism as an existential threat to the indigenous people of Palestine, a fear that turned to be valid, as transpired with the 1948 ethnic cleansing of the people of Palestine during the Nakba. Opposing the Jewish settlers and their plans for the Palestinians' homeland was not anti-Semitic, but anti-colonialist, very much as the Algerians objected to the colonization of Algeria. A small group of the Jewish settlers became anti-Zionists themselves when they consented to live within Arab Palestine as guests, but not as colonizers, as was advocated to them by Mahatma Gandhi in the 1930s, and because of that position, he was never honored with a street named after him in Israel, not even a small passway or a staircase. After the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, anti-Zionism as an anti-colonialist ideology continued to inform the Palestinian National Movement's vision and strategy, as is manifested in the PLO National Charter, that called for the establishment of a democratic secular state in Palestine that would respect all three religions. In Israel itself, the Communist Party, supported almost exclusively by the Palestinian minority inside Israel, not because of the communist ideology, but because it was the only anti-Zionist party Israel allowed to exist, they regarded Zionism as an ideology of discrimination and apartheid. Most scholars today, looking at Israel then and today, agree that this is a valid point, which again has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. Two, in our century, anti-Zionism is a moral position against the Israeli structural violence directed at the Palestinians, which is attributed by anti-Zionists such as myself to an ideology that is not only endangering the very existence of the Palestinians, but is also very bad for the Jews who live outside or inside Israel. This ideology generates anti-Semitism. Opposing it might bring it down. In our century, anti-Zionism is a scholarly position, a moral stance, and a vision for the future. As a scholarly position, it frames Zionism as settler colonialism, similar to European settlers' movement who went to the Americas, South Africa, and Australia, encountering indigenous people and removing them in order to create new homelands for themselves. It's a moral stance that rejects an ideology that imposes an apartheid system inside Israel, a military occupation in the West Bank, and siege on the Gaza ghetto. It's a vision for the future of a democratic state for all, by restoring justice to the land, by respecting United Nations Resolution 194, calling for the unconditional return of the Palestinian refugees expelled in 1948 and since the Nakba. This may be a utopian view, but it's not an anti-Semitic one. Three, for those who claim that anti-Zionism is a refusal to recognize the right of Israel to exist, we should say that states do not exist by right. They are founded by historical processes, and they become a fait accompli. The debate is about the nature of the state and the regime. We are all entitled to wish for and work for a better, more just, and egalitarian state for everyone who lives in Israel and Palestine, and for those who were expelled from there. Four, in 1975, a vast majority of the United Nations member states defined Zionism as a form of racism and racial discrimination. It was passed with the same majority that passed the 1947 resolution recognizing Israel. The difference was that in 1947, the colonized world was not represented in the United Nations. In 1975, it was. But it was still trying to find its way in the post-colonial world. The third world's discourse equated Zionism with continued colonialism. Alas, neoliberalism, corruption, and post-colonial political system, corruption in the post-colonial political system and aggressive American imperialism have cast it to the sideways of history, this impulse and energy. But at its height and within it, anti-Zionism was part of the wish of the colonized people to build a better and more just world. Again, nothing to do with anti-Semitism. When the 1975 resolution was revoked in 1991, the debate on Zionism entered a new phase, its present phase. After the horrific events in 9/11 and the so-called war on terror, the Israeli Hasbara invented the threat of a new anti-Semitism. This was the only way to repel the moral outrage people around the world felt towards the policies of incremental genocide in the Gaza Strip and the brutal oppression of the West Bank. If you voiced criticism against these policies, you were depicted as a new anti-Semite, and Israeli academia was recruited to provide scholarly scaffolding for such an accusation. The Western elites bought or were intimidated into buying this false allegation, but the civil society, and in particular the younger generation, reject with disgust this attempt to silence them. They know enough to call the bluff and understand the full meaning of solidarity with the Palestinians. They demonstrate in the streets, in the campuses, and join the Palestinians on the ground at the personal cost to show how outrageous it is to call the pure struggle for justice anti-Semitic. If you are an anti-Zionist today, you are not only standing firmly on a sound moral base in condemning this ideology that generates all these crimes, you are also expressing your disgust at the hypocrisy of your government, mainstream media, and academia. We will not be silenced by false accusation of anti-Semitism, and neither should the British Labour Party be intimidated by cynical media without a moral backbone or sinister legislation efforts utilizing a justified struggle against terror in order to provide immunity to Palestine's colonizers and oppressors. Finally, the Labour Party is responsible in many ways for the debate we have today. We all know that the so-called revelation of institutional anti-Semitism in the Labour Party began not on the day that Corbyn was elected as a leader, but after two attempts to depose him and failed. Then suddenly the campaign emerged. I know the force of this campaign of intimidation. I face it myself. It is ugly, unfair, and destabilizing. But the proud party with the historical role of defeating fascism in this country in the 1930s should not so easily succumb to false allegations of anti-Semitism. Finally, let us retake the conversation and prioritize it. Let us discuss how to stop the destruction of Palestine and the Palestinians, which the Trump's deal of the century wants to do. Let us fight violent fanaticism wherever we encounter it, uproot racism of all kinds without building a hierarchy of victims, and remove silly and outrageous equations like the one titling the event tonight. Thank you.
That was the Israeli historian Ilan Pappé, recorded on March 30, 2021, at a conference organized by Intelligence Squared. And here is his own summary of the situation in Palestine in March 2021.
A criminal Israeli prime minister who tries to avoid jail pursues a provocative action against the holiest place for Islam in Palestine, and the third holiest place for Muslims all over the world, in order to ignite the conflict that would retain him in power. In order to do so, he aligned himself with the right wing in Israel, which today dominates Israeli politics, and whose agenda is to Judaize fully Jerusalem and the West Bank through means of another catastrophe or Nakba. Brave Palestinian youth were able to thwart some parts of this plan, defending the homes of the people of Sheikh Jarrah and the sacred Al-Aqsa Mosque. It was clear to everyone that the Hamas in Gaza would not remain idle against such a provocation and aggression, nor will large segments of the Palestinian people who have been living for decades under harsh colonization, brutal occupation, and subject to incremental ethnic cleansing. We might be in the throes of a third uprising, a third intifada, which includes large segments of the forgotten Palestinians inside Israel, living in unrecognized villages which are refused basic infrastructure from the state, or in overcrowded towns, this allowed to expand under the apartheid laws of land regime of the land regime in Israel, with high levels of unemployment as a result of the de facto apartheid imposed by Israel on its Palestinian citizens. The Palestinian Authority is helpless. The Arab regime seek normalization rather than commitment. And the West, as always, is silent. And I have not heard much from the Muslim world as yet.
Ilan Pappé is an expatriate Israeli historian and activist. He's a professor with the College of Social Sciences and International Studies at the University of Exeter in the UK. Pappé is one of Israel's new historians. Since the release of pertinent British and Israeli government documents in the early 1980s, they have been rewriting the history of Israel's creation in 1948. And that includes the corresponding expulsion or flight of 700,000 Palestinians in the same year, an event that became known as the Nakba. On May 2021, when a ceasefire ended the most recent bombing of Gaza by Israel, the University of Exeter, UK, held a conference on the transition from capitalism to techno-feudalism, Ilan Pappé and Yanis Varoufakis were keynote speakers, and they decided to dedicate part of their discussion to the recent events in Palestine, Israel. Yanis Varoufakis is a Greek economist, college teacher, author, and politician. A former member of the Syriza party, he served as Minister of Finance from January to July 2015. Then he resigned in opposition to his party's fiscal politics. Varoufakis has since appeared in numerous debates, lectures, and interviews. In February 2016, he launched DiEM25, the Democracy in Europe movement, and became deeply involved in politics within the European Union. In the 2019 election, Varoufakis regained a seat in the Greek parliament. Here's Ilan Pappé opening their conversation at the University of Exeter, UK.
Thank you for agreeing to be with us, Yanis. While I wanted to have a structured discussion with you, beginning with the academia, moving to politics, we cannot ignore what happens in Palestine right now. What can we do right now, in your opinion? Should we strengthen our support for the boycott and divestment sanction movement? Should we ask for sanctions by governments? What is the next step in our solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine, given the unfolding reality in front of our eyes in the last 48 to 72 hours? I hope you don't mind we start with this, and then we'll move to more historical and theoretical questions.
Ilan, thank you very much for not just the invitation, but for everything you've done over the decades, to illuminate what is going on and to help me personally understand what's going on. You asked me what should we do, and you listed a number of things. The answer, of course, is all of the above. We need to take this struggle, primarily informing people and also calling upon governments, shaming governments into taking a position, and not to pretend that this is some conflict between two equals, that the rest of the world has the right to look upon dispassionately. I remember, let me just state this for the record, I've been following your writings for many, many years. And I remember something you wrote, I think it was 12 years ago, something like that. I kept a note of it because I have a long archive on the Palestinian question, because was it Edward Said who said that? I'm not sure whether it was Ed Said or someone said that until the Palestinians liberate themselves, Europeans and Americans are not going to liberate ourselves. And the thing you had written that, I'll just quote that because I've got it here on my screen. It seems that even the most horrendous crimes, such as the genocide in Gaza, are treated as desperate events, unconnected to anything that happened in the past and not associated with any ideology or system. If you watch the BBC today or listen to Radio 4 or the World Service, it's exactly that. There is some factual reporting that so many rockets were fired from Gaza and so many bombs landed in Gaza, and this building was demolished and so many people died and so many... But it is as if, to quote again your brilliant words, it is as if the whole thing is unconnected to anything that happened in the past and not associated with it, with any system or ideology. That is racism in action. That's what it is. The moment you take just the figures of a conflict and you take it out of the context of effectively an ongoing project that has been going on now for decades of ethnic cleansing, of pushing a native people off its land in order to effectively wipe the slate clean. The moment you're allowed to get away without any comments on this underlying project that is focusing only the events, that is when you become complicit to the crime that is being perpetrated And you can see that in Germany, for instance, you know, which is a country that is populated by people who are desperately trying to escape a dismal past by being politically correct. You can see that today there's zero information regarding what's going on, how it started. Nobody in Germany that I know of, very decent, very good people, knows that this latest cycle of violence, of conflict, began when dozens of families were threatened with expulsion from their home and the dynamitizing of their buildings. So we need to do so much at every different front. But let me now wear my Greek political hat just for a moment to convey to you and to relate to you my desperation, my deep sense of shame and foreboding. You will recall, and it was mentioned in my introduction, that in 2015, I became part of the government here in Greece. It was the most progressive government, probably in Europe. We were the result of massive demonstrations in 2011, the equivalent of Occupy Wall Street, the equivalent of the Indignados in Spain. A broad coalition of progressives gave rise to a movement that in the end took a small party from of the left, of the former Eurocommunist left, from 4% and gave us 40%. And we stormed the citadels of power. We became the government. Part of our agenda was solidarity with the people of Palestine. Anti-racism and fighting every form of racism, including, of course, primarily anti-Semitism, but solidarity with the people of Palestine. For 6 months, we put up a tremendous struggle. The Greek people rose to the occasion and very courageously increased their support of us from 40% to 60%. And on that night, my then comrade and prime minister surrendered to the powers that be. The powers that be were the representatives of the international oligarchy, the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, the European Commission. Now, why am I telling you all this? Because, you know, one surrender brings on another. Within weeks after my resignation, after that surrender of our government, which was supported by people who had shown remarkable solidarity to the Palestinians since the 1980s and before, Yasser Arafat, when he escaped Beirut, if you remember back in the early 1980s, found refuge in a very welcoming Greece. That party, that government, within weeks of their surrender to the international oligarchy, were hobnobbing with Netanyahu. They forged an alliance with Netanyahu's government, and they planned together to dominate the Eastern Mediterranean through a series of aggressive moves to drill the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea and to construct gas pipelines, all in association, in very close association and collaboration with ExxonMobil, with the French Total, and of course with Donald Trump. That degeneration of a political progressive government movement in whose DNA support of the Palestinian people was embedded so quickly into a staunch ally of Netanyahu. I have to tell you that this hurt me even more than the actual surrender to the Troika. Because, you know, deep down, we all want to give our comrades, even when we disagree and fall out with them, we want to give them the benefit of the doubt. So there is no doubt that we were under immense pressure from international finance to buckle. Now, I don't think we should have ever considered buckling, especially after that tremendous victory in the referendum of the 5th of July 2015. But, you know, in the end, something at the back of my mind wanted to forgive, to give a good cause to my comrades, Tsipras, for instance, for surrendering. But the sight of him hobnobbing with Netanyahu, the manner in which the so-called party of the radical left immediately forgot It's solidarity to the Palestinian people. Let me give you an example. Now they're in opposition. Of course, the Greek people have a tendency, quite rationally and wisely, to punish every party that betrays its commitments. So now we have a very right-wing government that overthrew that Syriza government. Now they're in opposition now. They're still supporting this treaty with Netanyahu. I stand on the floor of our parliament and I address political parties and I'm saying, is this not the time at least to recognize the Palestinian authorities as a state? Even though I am of the belief that now this is, the two-state solution is gone and past, and I think, like you, I support one democratic state for everyone, I challenge them to say what they will do in order to restore Greek support for the Palestinian people. And they look at me, even the comrades of the left, they look at me in the eye and they keep silent. And as we know, this kind of silence is the greatest ally of the crime that is being perpetrated. That silence is guilty. That attempt to take an equal position, or actually not an equidistant position, not to take sides, is simply a vote of confidence for Mr. Netanyahu. So our struggle here in Greece is to reignite the support for anti-racism everywhere in the world, for fighting anti-Semitism, while at the same time bringing to the court of public opinion the news of the apartheid policies that are being practiced in Israel. I'm very pleased that that Human Rights Watch delivered their report on apartheid. I feel personally indebted to B'Tselem and to other comrades in Israel for bringing up the question of apartheid. This is what we're trying to do as DiEM25, in Germany in particular, where you are almost immediately silenced as an anti-Semite if you talk about apartheid. So if you are an anti-racist, you are immediately assumed that to be an anti-racist means that you're an anti-Semite. We need to fight at many different fronts, at all levels, simultaneously, ceaselessly, night and day. Sorry for taking so long to answer, but this really hurts because you know this place here used to be, at least when it came to support and solidarity for the Palestinian people, quite solid. We are no longer solid. We've been corrupted by the oligarchy and by the promise of security alliances against Turkey, as if this is going to provide security to anyone.
That was Yanis Varoufakis, the Greek economist, college teacher, author, and politician. He served as Greek Minister of Finance in the summer of 2015. He spoke in conversation with the Israeli historian Ilan Pappe at the University of Exeter, UK, on May 20, 2021. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.